we're holding this membership campaign today because public radio relies on the support of real people. People like you, in order to continue its mission of bringing you the quality and the substance you expect every time you turn to this place on the dial. Your financial support makes everything you count on from public radio possible. Sure, you can get radio without the pledge drives, but it's not free. It often comes with compromised programming, and it certainly comes with lots of commercials. I don't have to tell you how different commercial radio sounds from this station. That's because the other stations are shaped around the needs of advertisers, not listeners. Commercial interruptions are what they offer every day, all year long. With public radio, you enjoy programming that's shaped only by a passion to better understand our world. Of course, by now you know that public radio, by definition, relies on the voluntary financial support of its listeners. In other words, people like you. When you call in or go online to support this station, you become an integral part of the equation that brings this kind of quality media to your entire community, even to people who either can't or just don't help to pay for it. They need this station as much as anyone, and your financial support, at whatever level you're comfortable with, makes this kind of programming available to everyone. It makes the fabric of your community stronger, and that's a good thing. If you're a fan of public television, you may know the show Doc Martin, set in the tiny seaside village of Port Isaac in Cornwall on the southwest tip of England. Martin Clune stars as the irascible village doctor. Martin, your show is set in Port Isaac, which you call Port Wen in the show. Is that because it's the quintessential type of Cornish village?
There's more to Cornwall than the kind of Port Isaac type village. I mean, it's typical of the north coast, which is far more rugged. And I think it was the sardine and the pilchard fishing industry that, you know, they were sort of built on.
Pilchards. And when you go to Cornwall, you find guys pressing pilchards into these round cartons, just like they were in the old days.
Yeah. I don't know what they do with them then. I never see them for sale anywhere.
Historically, they used to light the lamps of London, I think, pilchard oil.
Really?
Yeah. Fascinating.
Wow, that must have stunk.
There's a lot of fishy corners of Cornwall. And what you get in Cornwall, for our listeners, this is the southwest tip of England. You've got a Celtic region, don't you? Isn't there sort of a...
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And as you drive west, you can sort of almost sense the landmass diminishing around you as it gets thinner and thinner.
It gets ruggeder and ruggeder. I always feel like ages and ages ago in the misty past of Britain, it was inhabited by Celtic people. And then these other people came over from the continent, Angles and Saxons, and they pushed the Celtic people to the rocky, hard-to-farm corners, you know, Scotland, Cornwall, Wales. And even to this day, we still have that ruggeder kind of stock of people living on ruggeder land.
Yeah, I mean, there are theories that England was run from Cornwall, of course, because King Arthur and...
That's right, King Arthur was there.
...is associated. But, you know, it's not to be taken that seriously, because I think the first historian came about 300 years after his death, and he was a balladeer, so if it didn't rhyme, it didn't make the tune, you know?
Oh, no, that's funny. Rhymes shaping history. But the history goes back even farther than that, doesn't it? Because... I mean, according to legend, Joseph of Arimathea was
Joseph of Arimathea. Well, he was, that was Somerset. The Thorn of Arimathea is at Glastonbury, where they have the rock festival.
Yeah, but he was looking for tin or something like that. He was a tin merchant.
Oh, he possibly was, the little scamp. I didn't know that.
Hey, Martin, when you think about Cornwall, I think also about prehistoric sites, dramatic stone circles, standing stones, clapper bridges, all over the south of England, but in Devon and in Cornwall. Do you have any attraction to that yourself when you're roaming around your neck of the woods?
We have the giant of Cerne Abbas. I don't know if you've ever heard of him in Dorset.
I love that. It occurs to me all of South England is like 6 feet of topsoil and then chalk under that, and in ancient times, they could cut away the topsoil and you'd have a big white figure underneath that you could put on the side of a hill and advertise.
That's right.
And when you drive around England, you've got that reminder of your mystical past.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also wonder if it wasn't because there's something about the giant of Cerne Abbas that looks like it was the work of vandals because it's faintly obscene. I don't know. Maybe they just drank too much and went, come on, let's go and do that hillside.
Well, for our listeners who haven't been there, this is a giant. It must be one of the hugest figures ever carved by human beings. And it's got a giant erection sticking straight up to his belly button. And I understand that maidens would go there in the night on the summer solstice and leap over his penis in hopes of being more fertile. Did you ever hear that?
I did hear that, yes. I filmed there on a show I used to do called Men Behaving Badly.
What is the name of this figure again? I forget his name. It's the giant.
He's called the Giant of Cerne Abbas, C-E-R-N-E. It's a beautiful little village, a beautiful hillside.
One thing about Cornwall to me is it is, in a lot of ways, a tourist trap. You go to Tintagel, everything is King Arthur stuff. I mean, there's even a bar called the Excalibar where you can have...
Yeah, isn't that crass? In the castle, yes. Yes, we filmed in the Excalibar.
Is it still there?
Actually, I think they might have renamed it. It's been taken over by the Scientologists.
Okay, well, now they're probably serving a different brew right now.
Yeah, God knows.
Sometimes public radio's role is just flat out fun. It entertains us and brightens our days with stories from our communities and from other parts of the world. It inspires us, informs us, and makes us smile at the same time. Whatever role public radio plays in your day, I know it's important to you because, hey, you're listening right now. And I'm asking you to help out, to help keep us coming to you every day with both the serious and the not so serious stuff. Remember, this is not a charity. It's a service, and if you're consuming it, and if you can help afford to pay for it, it's only right to do so. Here's a challenge. Put a value on your public radio listening, and then call the station or go online right now and show your support.